Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
For the occasional listener, you may not realize who is at this table on a regular basis. Amy, we call her Amy T. Amy Thompson is here on a regular basis. Amy Jordan is always here on a regular basis, taking notes, letting us know what we need to include in the show notes. Jonathan's doing the same even as we talk, and providing any type of assistance that may need to take place during the production. But Jonathan, today we need cake.
Yeah, we do.
It's 2 days from Amy J's birthday.
Yeah.
When this is, I know it's my birthday too.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Both have July 16th as our birthday.
Yep.
But the point of this release 2 days later is Amy J's birthday.
And happy Bastille Day as well.
Really?
Yeah.
July 14th?
Yeah. Bastille Day.
All right.
Vive la France.
Well, okay. Okay. I get it. Reminds me of one of the old hymns, I Surrender All.
I apologize to our Francophile listeners.
So I just wanted to mention that we have a birthday girl 2 days from the release of this podcast. And I want to mention that we are always grateful to Midwestern Seminary. Had a great event in Phoenix with them, and continue to enjoy the great relationship we have, the leadership of Jason at Midwestern, and Charles and the rest of the gang. So thankful for that sponsor.
All right. And you know that, and we're going to talk about this, one of the problems that many young men and women interested in seminary, what they face is to having to put off getting ministry experience in order to get their ministry education. Our friends at Midwestern are solving this problem with their brand new Timothy Track. The Timothy Track offers select residential MDiv students placement in internship positions in local area churches, and now you can complement your studies with in-the-field ministry experience. In addition, all Timothy Track students will receive up to 12 credit hours for the internship and a 50% tuition scholarship for the first year. You can find out more about that at mbts.edu/Timothy Track. Also, Dr. Rainer, I want to mention,
yeah,
they have these really cool t-shirts at Midwestern.
Yes, they do.
Say for the church.
Yeah.
With a state on it. So I've got a Louisiana one and I have a Tennessee one because I'm a Louisiana native and I currently live in Tennessee.
So I need to get a Tennessee and a Florida one.
And an Alabama one.
You need
an Alabama one. You don't need the Florida or Tennessee ones. You just need an Alabama one.
No. My favorite state is Florida.
Oh, okay.
But I love Middle Tennessee as well.
Yes.
So both of those.
But what I'm saying is the t-shirts, people can now buy them.
Ooh.
They're for sale. They just made them for sale last month.
Good.
So as of like June 1st, I think you could order them online. So I'll put a link to that at the bottom of the podcast. You want to pick up a For the Church t-shirt. They're really cool. I love them.
We are talking today about 10 most frequent questions pastors have. You ask, how do we know this?
Because we get asked them.
We get asked these questions. We get asked in an informal way through social media, through the blog, through the podcast. We get asked in a formal way through church answers where that's really one of the major things that happens at church answers. Pastors and church leaders will ask a question, and within very short time, usually just a few hours, even a few minutes at times, they get the answer to them. So we're able to see on a regular basis thousands of questions coming in, and so we picked what we see as 10 of the most frequent questions that we get from pastors.
All right, number one is, where do I begin to lead my church toward revitalization?
Yeah, the beginning question is the big question. And it really is a that depends a yep. question. It depends on where the church is in its need for revitalization. Let me give you an example. Talking to a church in Florida, a church we've mentioned here before in the past, and the attendance is down to 22 from highs of 300 and 350.
I think now would be a good time to look toward revitalization.
Yeah, but the first step is more dramatic with that type of dramatic decline that they've had. And the first step may actually be merger or acquisition by someone else. Revitalization at this point, organically or within the church, may be difficult, if not impossible.
And that goes back to that replanting thing. That may be a 5 to 10 year type process.
Yep.
Whether maybe the merger or something like that is a little bit quicker, well, actually a lot quicker. And could see more success.
Let me say this to those who ask this question. Sometime in the very near future, I will be doing a blog post on the steps of revitalization. And basically, it's not how to, but it's where are you?
Oh, and the stages?
The stages.
Kind of life stages of church revitalization?
Or the death stages or declining stages or whatever of revitalization. And then what is the thing that you need to do at that point? Mm. So starting point depends on where you are. Now, here's the key for most church leaders. Most church leaders are further in the decline and need for revitalization than they think. Mm. So if the most urgent need is a 10 and the least urgent need is a 1, a pastor may come in and say, I think I'm in a 4. They're probably at a 6 or 7. So you're usually further along in the need for revitalization than you think. I'll be getting that information out in the near future.
All right, number 2, what do I do about our aging church facilities?
Who are you going to call?
Tim Cool.
Tim Cool.
CoolSolutionsGroup.com.
Yeah, and the reason we mentioned just one person, and it's not just one person. I mean, but go. We have the links to Tim Cool's 3 blog posts that he offered on what if I have aging and large church facilities. So we'll put that in there. And rather than us go into all the issues, I urge you to look at that because he is going to offer a lot of alternatives like downsizing the worship center, how to get funds that you don't have for refurbishing the facilities that by moving things around or by being more efficient with utilities. So there are many things that you can do. I would suggest that you just go to that and let him break it out more in depth.
Yeah. And also check out that podcast we did with him.
Yeah. Great podcast.
Really good podcast.
Got that in the show notes too.
Question about this.
Yeah.
Is this something, this seems to be something that we're going to be seeing more and more because we had a big church building boom.
Yeah.
I guess you could say in the 60s and 70s, it seems.
It was the heydays.
And those facilities now, 2017, they're 50, 60, 40 years old.
Yep.
You know, after the baby boomers moved out to the suburbs, you had to build new churches. The whole economic shift in the U.S. and where people lived meant that we had new church buildings in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
You're right.
Those are now 40, 50, or 60 years old.
Correct.
So now that's where we're facing these aging church facilities. The big churches that exploded in the 80s and 90s, they built newer facilities, and some of those are still 20 and 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But the mid-sized churches, the 100, 200-sized churches, those are the ones that are going to be really faced with this crisis of facility age in coming years.
Here's 2 things I would say do. Go back again. This is redundant. And see what Tim Cool had to say on the links in the bottom. Second of all, if you get to the point where you just do not think you can sustain your church in that facility, do everything you can to keep those facilities for a church in the future.
Yeah.
Because we are losing space to churches. I was talking to one of our buddies in New York City, and he was talking about how many church facilities they've lost in some of the most valuable areas. And it, you know, it's just a burden for him. And then just yesterday, I was talking to someone about Pinellas County, Florida. You know, I used to pastor in St. Pete. And they listed the churches that had closed, and many of them no longer used for church facilities. Those were some of my closest affiliate churches and church friends. Mm. I didn't know that all closed.
Well, there was a story in the Nashville News early June, I think maybe it was late May.
Okay.
About a Methodist church here in town on the West End.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for those of you who know Nashville West End, that's a hot area.
Yeah.
In the downtown area. But it had closed and had been bought by a, like a promoter being turned into a, like a event venue. Mm-hmm. Event venues are big deals here in Nashville for weddings.
And then they gave all these examples of other churches in that article.
Yeah.
Here's one that is used for a bar. Here's one that is, you use for a house. I mean, some people were buying them for houses too.
It's the house of the Lord.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
but the reason they were talking about it is they had this huge, really nice organ, pipe organ. They're trying to get rid of, figure out how to get rid of it and everything. So I know your affinity for pipe organs, Dr. Rayner.
Mm, yeah.
So, but that's just a local example of that. And I'm sure that's happening and it is happening all over the country.
So true.
Number 3, how do I handle church financial issues?
This has to do with the issue of preparation or the lack of preparation would be a better way of putting it. It's absolutely amazing. Let's just look at a church averaging 100 in attendance, okay? We have a lot of our listeners that have their budget is going to be in the 150,000, 175,000 range, okay? How many pastors have been trained to deal with low to middle six-figure budgets.
None.
Very few. Very few have. And so we're sending leaders out. And yeah, you have laypersons who have financial backgrounds and they can help. But you have the pastor who is there day by day, supposed to be making the financial decisions in some regard, at least from a visionary point of view. Mm-hmm. And many of them do not know how to do so. I think that this is an area where Art Rayner, my son, is going to be offering more and more assistance. We had a question at Church Answers recently. I'm starting a church for the first time, and they want me to do an initial budget. What do? I don't have a clue on what to do. So this is an area I cannot answer all the issues about how do I handle church financial issues. But I can say this, that's one of the things that we're really handling at Church Answers, more and more church financial issues. And when Art and his team launch Envelope 3, we'll be talking more about that with him, about that ministry as well.
And number four, how do I handle conflict and personnel issues?
Yeah, same situation. In terms of preparation, some people naturally handle conflict and personnel just fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a natural ability. I'm thinking, about one of our mutual friends, Dean and Sarah, just giving him a shout out here. And he is just a natural leader with handling conflict, sometimes creating conflict and dealing with personnel issues.
Yeah.
He's just got it, but he's a rarity. And, you know, he visited with us recently, and he made the comment. I don't remember his exact words, but why don't people deal with these issues now? Because they're going to have to deal with it later.
Make the inevitable the immediate.
That was a great quote.
Yeah.
That was just a great quote. But many need training in this area, and they do not have training. And this sounds like a constant plug for Church Answers, but this is one of the areas that we constantly get questions on, just dealing with the question of a pastor and his personnel and personal interaction with a children's director in the church.
Yep.
And it's just ongoing. Big question.
All right. The next one is, I think, one of the classic "it depends" answers to it. Number five, what is the best leadership structure for a church?
What is the best leadership structure for a church? Let me tell you what some churches have done, and this will sound like it's an indictment of an elder form of government, whether it's elder-led, elder-run, or something. It is not. So please don't send those emails. It is not. But there are some who will say, oh, they went to an elder government, whatever elder blank it may be.
Yeah.
And that is the magic bullet for us, without understanding all that is implicit in there. And quite frankly, if you're going to change the structure of the church in any way, don't do it because another church did it. Understand contextually, congregationally, theologically, and polity-wise why you are making those decisions. And I probably should have begun with theological as the main thing. Don't look at these as magic bullets. For example, I have a bunch of bad deacons, and so I'm going to create elders in order to work around
deacons. You're going to have a bunch of bad
elders as well, unless you begin to solve some of the endemic problems that are there.
Yeah, and what I've noticed with church government, with church polity structures and stuff, you know, you said that, you know, there's a lot of different types of them, even within, you know, an elder structure or something like that. But the thing is, if you say that X church has elders and Y church has elders, that could be two different things.
Two totally even if the blank is the same,
yes,
like elder led or elder run or something like that.
How it plays out in the local church is completely contextual a lot of times. And it doesn't matter. And this is what I've also noticed. It doesn't matter what type of government you've got. If you've got people who are not doing it for the right reasons and right motivations and whose hearts aren't right.
Back in May, I wrote an article on deacons.
Yeah.
And I made the statement, the Bible speaks a pretty good bit about the qualifications of deacons.
Yeah.
But it does not talk about how they do what they do. And so we have these assumptions that, okay, Lifeway back when, I think Henry Welb did this, if I recall correctly, wrote about the Deacon Family Ministry Plan. It is a good ministry for deacons who are wired that way.
Yeah.
But there are some deacons who are not wired to do the pastoral care that is required for that. And so we have assumed that there is one way to do things because of something that has been there. And so I wrote that blog post in order to just say, hey, some churches are doing this differently. And that's just within the diaconate. That's not within the overall structure of the church, staff structure, elder structure, deacon structure, budget structure, organizational structure,
committees.
All of those things. Committee structure.
I know you love
task force. Well,
you love a good committee.
I like task force. I do.
Because they're defined term, defined goal, and then they're gone.
I would hesitate to have many committees for the reason you just said.
All right, number six. What are the best practical ministry tools?
Oh, we get those questions a lot.
There's
a lot of church management software.
And a lot of times there is no, quote, best.
No, sometimes it's, do you want the most affordable?
Yeah.
Do you want one that works more with membership management?
Yeah.
Do you want one that does maybe emails and contacts for you? Do you want one that helps manage your groups? You've got to ask those questions before you go out and purchase something. And sometimes you'll go out and purchase a church management software. For example, we're just talking about church management software. And it will be way more than you need. And you have all this functionality that you don't need. But, you know, there's text giving, there's online giving, there's virtual workers, and there's churchanswers.com,
yes.
Since I have been redundant on Church Answers today.
All right, number seven, how do I establish a vision for my church?
Here I am. I can't get away from Church Answers. I'm sorry. But the very first Church Answers that I did, as far as the virtual staff meeting, the very first one I did when we relaunched Church Answers back in February of 2017, the very first one I did was, what are the steps to establish a vision? Now, you can go read Simple Church, but I took Simple Church and said, okay, here is a 1, 2, 3, 4 way to do it. Now, what we're doing here is we're going to frustrate a lot of listeners because basically we're reading the questions and saying, yeah, this is one of the areas they're going to come back and say, tell us more.
Yeah.
And we do tell more in different places.
Yep. All right. Number 8, how do I deal with power struggles in the church?
You know, I think, Jonathan, when our platform began to write about bullies and conflict and power groups, it was one of the first times in a broad stroke. There have been books written on it here and there, occasional blog posts, I understand that. But it's the first time that I think it has been surfaced on such a massive scale that church leaders began to say, I'm not alone. Other leaders are experiencing this. I'm not weird because I'm having these conflict or power struggle issues. I'm not overly sensitive because I think that person is a bully in the church. If anything else, simply the awareness that it is pervasive, unfortunately, in the messy churches in which we serve has been one of the more helpful things we've done.
All right, number 9, how do I lead change in the worship services?
Call Mike Harlan. Yep.
TomRainer.com/worshipguru.
Yes. You really did that,
yeah,
didn't you?
I did.
So are those the podcasts?
Yeah.
So TomRainer.com/worshipguru.
Yep.
Harlan's going to love that. So in case you're wondering, those are the podcasts we did addressing that issue with Mike Harlan.
And a lot of other things too.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, this is a big one because you mentioned that the worship wars, they've kind of slowed down.
Yes.
But people are always wanting to change. I mean, I see questions all the time online about lighting in the worship services, about music styles, about which hymns to use or which, you know, praise choruses to use and things like that. So there's so many different things, so many aspects of corporate worship that there are so many questions about.
And what's the date of the Sing conference coming up?
It's in September.
So in September, Mike Harlan and I are doing a breakout, probably a large breakout.
Yes.
On how do I lead change in a worship service? Mm. So the worship guru meets Rainer.
Yeah.
And we
do
this.
I was going to figure out what guru to call you, but
don't call me any guru.
You probably wouldn't like the adjective I would have used there.
Thank you so much.
All right. Number 10, can I survive?
Yeah.
That's the big question.
How many times are we just getting pastors asking the very survival question? I'm worn out. My family is frayed. Church life is changing more rapidly than I ever would have imagined. When I got into this, I had this idealistic point of view that God would use me as his instrument to change the world. And I can't even change the deacon body in my church, much less the world. Am I going to survive? And there are too many pastors, unfortunately, and other church leaders where they are determining that the answer is no. And if there is, I shouldn't say a single issue, but one of the more important issues that keeps coming up again and again and again is, should I remain in vocational ministry? And I'm hearing a lot of them answer that question with no and going on to other places. And this foretells what we are seeing on a large scale that is about to be a massive scale. This foretells that we will have a shortage of church leaders, even more so today. I'm even more so in the future, I should say, than today. And I think it's going to be an acute problem. It's not only lack of preparation, which is the front end issue. It is those who are falling out, which is the attrition issue. And unfortunately, this is a question that will be asked more and more.
All right. And if you're needing a church
good
minister.
Good segue, Jonathan. Good segue.
Yes. Talk to Vanderblumen Search Group. They're the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Not three things. Instead of doing it in list form, let me just make some concluding thoughts. If you are somewhat frustrated with the fact that we asked the questions without all the answers. Now, this is a fairly long show notes on this in terms of the resources that we have mentioned to you and the links that you can have, but we may not have answered all of those very, very well. I do want to give a shameless plug because we created Church Answers in order to address these issues on an ongoing basis. So we've got it open for a short time. If you want to just come in and join us at Church Answers, we don't keep it open. Really, we only have a significant opening to register twice a year. But every now and then, when we talk about issues like this, we want to allow you at the moment to come in. So please feel like you can come in. You'll find out it's so affordable that almost anybody can become a part of Church Answers, where you can come in and ask these questions 24/7 on an ongoing basis. So thank you for allowing me to overplug Church Answers in the midst of what was a natural segue, the 10 most frequent questions pastors have.
Well, if we're going to talk about questions, we got to talk about answers. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So,
all right. Well, thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and your new favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.